They never left it because they're all the types of reporting.
Don't worry, just when we're just using the room mics, if that's what you're looking for.
Oh, is that right?
It has an issue. So.
Okay, good. Thanks.
I think we're good to go.
So, welcome. Thank you for coming to the talk. We have time, all those things. Today we're going to hear from Yan Bai, the possible dark matter collider.
Okay, thanks for the invitation. So today I will talk about some interplay between dark matter and collider physics. Okay, see, let's first start with this plot. When we look into the sky, we see stars, galaxies, and clusters. So it seems that what we see is just where the mass is. But the truth is just the opposite way. So using the Doppler shift, we can measure the galaxy rotation curves, which is just the speed of star moving around the center of the galaxy as a function of the distance between the star and the center of the galaxy. And from Kepler laws, we expect the periodicity of the rotation time should be square, should be proportional to this r cubic. Or translated that in terms of the rotation velocity as a function of the distance r, which says that if we assume all the mass of galaxies coming from the visible part, from the visible stars, and once we far away from the visible part, we should anticipate the velocity decrease as we increase the distance. So that is this way proportional to 1 over square root of r. So this is just a basic assumption that what we see is all the mass of galaxy. However, what we observe is just the opposite for that. So as you can see in this plot, if we just make it based on that assumption, we should see this curve to be moving in this line. And as we go outside of this visible region, and as you can see, this curve should drop, and the curve should be described by that 1 over square root of r. However, the observed data is this yellow dotted point. And as you can see, that outside of this visible star region, this curve still keeps going. So this tells us that there is something, some missing particle in the visible star region. So here are some more rotation curves for more galaxies here. So you can see that for majority of those galaxies, they will have the rotation curve which will not decrease as we go outside of the visible part, and that shows in this plot. So there are also some other, many other evidences for dark matter in our galaxy or in our universe. For example, from gravitational lensing and from Pulitzer cluster and also from cosmic microwave background. And I will not go to detail about those much more evidences. So quantitatively, then we have the matter side of our universe, which says that ordinary matter only occupies 16.8% of the total matter in our universe, and the another majority part of the matter should come from dark matter, which is around 83.2%. So I should be also mention that here I only plot the matter content of our universe. However, the matter content only occupies 1/4 of the total energy of our universe. There is another 3/4 which refers to the dark energy, and I will not mention dark energy in this talk. So I mainly concentrate on this matter part. Okay, so so our understanding of the ordinary matter is starts from the fact that the ordinary matter is made of molecule is made of atom, and electron, an atom is made of electrons and nucleons, and the nucleus is made of protons and neutrons. And then from particle physics, we understand that the proton and the neutron, they are made of quarks. Then we have this well-established standard model, and which contains 12 fermions, which is different quarks and different charge electrons and different three different neutrinos. And we also have several bosons, which carry an integer number of spin. And we have the photon, we have W and the Z gauge boson, as well as this gluon, which describes the strong interaction for ordinary matter. So there is another boson, which is so-called the Higgs boson, which is extremely important in particle physics, trying to understand the electroweak symmetry breaking. Why the electroweak symmetry breaking is important? Because that is the only way we can understand why those quarks get mass, and why those W and Z gauge boson get their masses. And there are a lot of activities, a lot of beyond standard models trying to understand the electroweak scale. So also the standard model is so rich, but however, we have no idea at the current moment about what is in this majority part of the matter pipe, which is what is the dark matter section. And also we don't know in detail what will be the interplay or the interaction between dark sector and the standard model sector. So then we have many fascinating questions to ask. For example, is dark matter an elementary particle? And is dark matter a fermion or boson? And how many particles in the dark matter sector? And how does dark matter particle interact with ordinary matter? And then how we produce or store dark matter particles? And so on. So to analyze those questions, we should first ask the most important or the first question, which is what particle is dark matter made of? So you want to have a particle. So in essence, we are looking for a particle which is dark and so neutral, doesn't radiate photons, and so there is no electromagnetic charge. And we also have it to be stable, so they can exist at the current moment. And then we need to require it has a lifetime to be around the age of our universe. And also we need to have it to behave and relate to other particles in the standard model. And Bacall named this particle as a weakly interacting massive particle, or called a WIMP. And that will be the major concentration of this talk. So on top of that requirement, the previous requirements, I will also add another property for, yes?
How do you know it has to be heavy relative to the other?
Because if it is heavy, and then it's a little cold at the current moment, and then that will not change the large structure of the galaxy, and there are some other...
Well, cold, yeah, but how do you, if it's weakly interacting, how do you know that it wouldn't be light? I mean, you don't know that it came into equilibrium with the other particles, so it could be cold without being...
Okay.
It could be cold and still be light.
Yes, I agree. So but I think that here what I'm trying to say is that so heavy means at least heavy than ordinary particles, and I will assume that the interaction is as large as the weak interaction to the standard model particle. And based on that, then I can at least understand the evolving history of the dark matter particle. And I also agree with your other options, but that's a little bit beyond the WIMP scenario. Okay, so I will add another property for the WIMPs, which is that WIMP can interact with standard mode particle and in some paired way. You know, since you need to have two dark matter particles for interacting with either two charged electrons or two quarks in the standard mode. The reason is that we need to require two dark matter particles interaction at the same time, because if we only have one particle, then the dark matter will decay to ordinary matter, and then that will not be a stable part. Okay, so based on this additional assumption, then we can calculate the radical density of WIMPs, and trying to understand the matter density or energy density of dark matter particles. So we start with just after the Big Bang, and at that time, the temperature is extremely hot, and the density is also very, very high, and the dark matter were in thermal equilibrium with ordinary matters. So what I mean thermal is that two dark matter particles, they can annihilate into two standard mode particles, and then they can go this way, or two quarks or standard mode particles, they have enough kinetic energy, because the temperature is so high, they are moving very, very fast. So they have enough energy to produce two dark matter particles. So they can go back and forth, then they will have the same number density. So at a very high temperature, and we have the equal number of dark matter particles and standard mode particles. So as the temperature drops below the WIMP mass, then the story is changed. We still can have dark matter annihilated into quarks or leptons, because they are heavier, based on that assumption, they are massive particles, they are heavier than quarks and leptons. And however, the opposite process is forbidden, because the temperature is low, and that means that the kinetic energy of quarks or leptons are not over the dark matter mass, and this opposite process is forbidden. In that sense, the WIMP number density will follow the Hertzsprung distribution, which is exponential minus m over t. And you can see from this formula, once the temperature is decreasing, and this formula will be dropping. So then we will have the number density of dark matter keep decreasing. And the number density of dark matter will be smaller than the number density of other ordinary quarks or charged leptons. So at this moment, I should also mention that since our universe is expanding, so in that sense, all the number density of including dark matter and ordinary matter are diluted. So as the universe expands to some point, the WIMPs can not find their partners to annihilate. So for that case, both directions are forbidden. And then, at that moment, the WIMP radical density will be frozen out. So that's what we heard, typically, the freeze out. And trying to understand the energy density of dark matter. So at that time, so the number density of dark matter will be fixed with respect to the expansion of our universe. So quantitatively, we can solve the Hertzsprung equation for the WIMP density. And then we can arrive at this formula, and we have the energy density of dark matter to be inversely proportional to the annihilation rate. So that means if the annihilation is too fast, then we have a smaller number of dark matter at the current day. And so putting some numbers, and in order to satisfy the observed value for this omega chi, that requires the annihilation rate to be roughly 1 picobar. And if we assume the interaction between dark matter and ordinary matter is as large as, for example, electromagnetic interaction strengths, then we can predict that the dark matter mass to be around 100 GeV. So this points out to the length scale of weak interaction. So then we should ask, is this a coincidence? We know that in order to explain electric breaking, there are some new actions and new particles usually appear in those models. And generically, then we should ask, do those models contain WIMPs? It turns out that most of those models indeed contain some new neutral particles which has weakly interacting strengths with ordinary matters. Yes?
In your conclusion that the interaction strength was about the weak interaction, did any assumption on the mass of the particle of the Chi go into that? I mean, the formulas went by too fast, I couldn't.
Oh, I see.
That's independent. Oh, I see the mass is in there. So
yes, what I'm trying to say is that we have this cross section,
yeah.
And we have this. If I make an assumption, the interaction strength is fixed to be alpha 1/137.
Then you will get the mass to be
around 100.
But that's a pure assumption.
That's a pure assumption. So now I'm just trying to say that there are a lot of beyond standard models which will have a predict a neutral particle which has a weakly interacting interaction with the standard model particles. So for those cases, then we can say that a lot of those models can indeed predict WIMP candidates. So since most of those models indeed contain new neutral particles, so our next question would be whether there is a new stable neutral particles. So it turns out that almost in every model of electric symmetry breaking, and there exists unbroken discrete symmetries. And then we have some neutral particle which is stable. So usually such a discrete symmetry is not just to achieve to have a WIMP candidate. And in most of the cases that this discrete symmetry is required for some other reasons, like forbid a proton from decaying too fast. So the Technicolor model is a little bit traditional one. It's a little bit different because for that case, they don't have an ordinary WIMP pool. In a sense, they don't have this WIMP pool coincidence or WIMP pool miracle. However, they can still have some baryon-like candidates for dark matter particle. And then you can use the baryon, anti-baryon asymmetry to explain the relic density of the dark matter particle. So in that case, the dark matter particle is a bounded state of Technicolor fermions. So anyway, so I will not discuss Technicolor. I will to use the supersymmetry as an example. So supersymmetry is just the idea that all bosons and fermions in nature have partners with opposite statistics. For example, we can have the fermionic photon, which is called a volcano, or sometimes called a neutrino, which is a possible candidate of dark matter. So in the past few years, there are more and many other models based on extra dimension models that also have WIMP candidates, and that will not go through all of them. So, as an elementary particle physicist, so this is a fantastic news because now we have a prediction in many, many models for WIMP candidates. Then we can use the methods of particle physics to search for dark matter particles now. So here, just to give you an example of one example for in supersymmetry, what would be the spectrum? And so since there are lots of new particles, every standard model particle quarks leptons will have some partners. So as you can see that from bottom up, the mass is increasing. So then we have the lightest one over there, which is the neutrino, which is the lightest super particles. And that will be the candidate in the WIMP candidate in the supersymmetry models. So however, as you can see, since there are so many particles in this supersymmetry model, so in that sense, there will be different, if you just do a little bit simple mathematics calculation, you can easily find that there will be like hundreds and thousands of different spectrum. And so that means that you have a huge, large number of parameter space that you should explore. So then that means that we need a better search strategy, especially when the experimental problem energy is below or not too far from the dark matter mass. Just for example, suppose the problem energy, the center for mass energy of experiments can only problem at this range. So in that sense, you can only probably problem dark matter particle, the neutrino, or some one or few new particles in this spectrum. So one lesson we can learn, which is from the Fermi theory of beta decay, so which is just to describe the neutron decays to proton plus electron and antineutrino. So Feynman and Gell-Mann further deduced its vector and axial vector structure. So in their original paper, so they point out that one can use some weakly interacting weak strength four fermion interaction to describe the beta decay. So now, since we have the standard model, we understand the weakening interaction to a pretty good level. So then we can rethink what's the story for Feynman and Gell-Mann, for example. So we have the neutron and the proton. It comes to W gauge boson, and the W gauge boson can goes to electron and the neutrino. So if we have experiments, especially for the beta decay, the energy scale is much below the W gauge boson. So then we can integrate out the W gauge boson. Then we generate these four fermion interactions. And in terms of formula, and one can see that you can have four fermion interactions with axial coupling or vector coupling or axial coupling. And that G Fermi just to describe the strength of this interaction. One can start with Lagrangian, and then we can do experiments and try to measure the detailed coefficients of this formula. And it turns out that one can use angular correlations of the decay products to measure those two values. And it turns out that if we choose this to be 1, and this is 1.3. Okay, so let's sort of beta decay. So now we can use the same kind of philosophy for the dark matter search. So, for example, in supersymmetry, we can have two dark matter or two neutrino particles goes to two up quarks, for example, by exchanging the super partner of up quark in the T channel. As you can see, if suppose the dark matter mass is much lighter than the super partner of up quark, then we can also integrate out the super partner of up quark to generate these four fermion interactions. So in that sense, generically, one can use this kind of effective field theory approach and trying to just write down a bunch of operators, but not too many, for two dark matter particles coupled to two quarks. So here I just write down, for example, the first one is a scalar-scalar interaction, and the second one is a vector-vector interaction. And the third one would be the axial vector and the axial vector interactions. So having described the interactions of dark matter particles, now we can test those interactions and use those interactions trying to find the dark matter from different experiments. So since dark matter in the universe can annihilate into ordinary matters, for example, two dark matter can go to positrons or to antiproton, or one proton and one antiproton, and some photons as well as a neutrino. So then we can use a cosmic ray experiments to test whether there will be some how much of dark matter annihilating into different channels. So there are several experiments trying to do that. For example, we have a satellite-based experiments like Pomona and Fermi. And also we have the ground-based telescope like experiment called HAYES to test that. So in this talk, I will not discuss too much about cosmic rays or indirect searches for dark matter. Instead, I will start mainly concentrate on the direct detection of dark matter particle. So for direct detection of dark matter, the story is that you have a dark matter flies in and there are some so there's some detector and then there's some nucleus inside of the detector, and after dark matter collides with the nucleus, and it will bounce off, then depart. Since dark matter is moving in our galaxy, as with respect to in the light frame, dark matter is moving. So in that sense, dark matter will carry some kinetic energy. After this kind of collision, and dark matter will deposit some kinetic energy into the nucleus. So typically those deported energies are tens of keV, which is actually too small compared to so typical energy of the cosmic rays, for example, or some other radioactivity decays. So in that sense, we need some very quiet place to measure such a small energy. So here is just one example of some direct detection experiments says here, and which is like 2 kilometers below the ground, and that is a slow level in this province. And they use a log to share the cosmic rays, basically, and here it can be defined as a quiet place. So here I just give you some example of a direct detection experimental detector, let's see. So that is a so-called project in Canada to search for supersymmetric objects, or in other words, Picasso. So so what they have is some fluorocarbon droplets inside this container. And so as dark matter flies in, and then we heat this droplet, and then we break this droplet. And then they set up some devices and try to lessen the acoustic wave generated by this breaking process. And it turns out that specific for Picasso, and they have line protons. And you can see that those line protons, they will not be paired. In that sense, there will be one proton will be unpaired, and that will carry a larger spin. So based on that, they will have a pretty good sensitivity on spin-dependent direct detection cross-section. And in terms of our effective operator, and that can be very, very sensitive to this operator, the axial vector interaction. So if you start with this operator, you do long relativistic expansion, then you will find that indeed this comes to the target proportion to the target spin. So then we can do some calculation and try to check how large of the direct detection cross section, but just based on this effective operator. And then we have the cross section to be proportional to a square of the reduced mass of dark matter and the proton, and over the triple of the phosphor, and up to some constant. This constant is can be understood as the matrix element of the quark with this kind of combination inside the proton. And typically it's just order one. Suppose we put some numbers for this cutoff, say 100 GeV. Because now this is reduced mass, if dark matter is heavier than the proton mass, the reduced mass will be proton mass. So then we can put some value for the cutoff. Then we can estimate what is the typical cross section. And you will find it's like 1 picobar or 10 to minus 36 centimeter squared. So since Picasso has not yet discovered some signals which is above the background, in that sense, they haven't really discovered the dark matter yet. However, you can set some limit for the in this plot, which is in the x-axis is the dark matter mass, in the y-axis is the spin-dependent scattering cross-section, and which is trying to describe how large of the interaction of dark matter and the standard model particle. So their result is this red line, and all the region above this red line is ruled out based on their lower result. And you can see that from this plot compared to many other experiments, they are pretty sensitive on this spin-dependent scattering cross-section. And also I should mention that there is another shaded region which is provided by this Dharma-Liberal collaboration, and they argue they have already observed the positive result. They argue they have already observed the dark matter as a particle and based on some modulated events. So that is for the spin-dependent one. So for spin-independent cross-section, then we have another 2 direct experiments like Zeta-100 and CDMS. They pretty competitive to set a limit on this scattering cross-section versus the dark matter mass. So this shaded region is just some parameter space scan for super constrained MSSM models. And as you can see that there is the Dhamma and another region as well as another experience called the cogent. We also observed around the 2 sigma axis and trying to argue that that may be due to dark matter, but they are not very confident about that. And anyway, so as you can see that also there are some positive results, but those positive results is in conflicting with other experiment, directly experiments, which has excluded those explanations, those positive results. And but I should also mention that when they set this limit, they still based on that simple operator, some extent. They only think, they only assume that there is only one dark matter particle, and that will be the simplest one, but may not be the minimum one. So it turns out that in the last few years, there are lots of activity trying to accommodate at one time explain this gamma positive results, and at the same time to get around of this other exclusive limit. And it turns out in order to explain the gamma modulation beta, and typically you need to assume more particles in the dark matter sector. And for example, I also did one work which is so-called a resonant dark matter model, which we have the dark matter goes in, and there is another partner of the dark matter, which is has a negative charge. And so then you will have some bound state for this partner of dark matter with the nucleus. And the scattering cross-section will be mediated by this bound state. And the different experiments, they have different nucleus. And the different nucleus, they have different Z number. And since in our model, the binding energy is from the electromagnetic interaction, then that means that you have different binding energy for different experiments. And for some experiments, like Dhamma, they can reach to the bound state. And for some experiments, CDMS and Zeon, they have Z number to be smaller than the element in Dhamma, and they cannot reach the resonant state. So anyway, so that's just a resonant scenario. And I will not go to detail because that requires us to go beyond the effective field theory of dark matter, beyond this operator analysis. Okay, so let's come back to this operator analysis. And since direct radiation probes the dark matter coupling to nucleons or to protons and or neutrons, so in high energy physics, that means that we can build colliders and trying to use proton or antiproton collision to produce heavy particles. For example, we have a proton here, proton or antiproton here, and trying to produce two dark matter particles if the energy is sufficient high to above twice of the dark matter mass. Then we should ask one question, is that since we have colliders for such a long time, so why there is no bounds from colliders on this dark matter scattering cross-section and the dark matter mass? So let's start with the experiments at Pavitron, at Fermilab. And as you can see, there is two circles, and the upper one is the main collision part, which is called the Pavitron, and they have like a two detector, one is D0, another one is CDF. And there is a main building, which is Wilson Hall, and I worked there for 3 years. So here is give you some photo about this CDF detector. And as you can see, there are lots of wires and lots of materials around. It's a very, very complicated business. And I was trying to simplify that complicated picture by using this kind of a cartoon picture, which is that from left side, which is the inner part of the detector, to the right side, which is the outer part of the detector. And you can see, typically it is cut by four parts. We have the blue part, which is called a tracking detector. In that sense, if some particle which carry charges, that will leave some tracks here. And we can measure the tracks. And then we have this electromagnetic calorimeter, which is trying to measure the electromagnetic activities of those objects. For example, electron or photon, they will leave some energy here, as well as some jets like beam meson or helium, heat searcher. And also we have this hydrometer calorimeter, which I'm trying to measure the jets basically, and because jets have a large strong interactions. Anyway, so finally we have this, or maybe muon is Landers. I don't know why. Because they are long, because they have pretty long lived, and that means that they can exist for a longer time. Actually, this is like a meter scale from that left side to here. And so this is a muon detector. So in principle, from collider point of view, we are just trying to measure those four objects. I also should mention that the dark matter particle, since it has not extremely weak, but have a weak interaction, in essence, it will not deposit energies in those four parts. So they will just penetrate the detector and they leave no trace. And I also should mention that in the standard model, neutrino will behave the same way as dark matter, and they will just pass the detector and leave no trace. So if the collider final state only contains dark matter particles, suppose we only produce two dark matter particles, in that sense, there will be no information from detectors, and we cannot say anything when there is this kind of event happening, and when there isn't. So, but fortunately, and if we just look at the actual process to produce two dark matter particles, and we have the quark and anti-quark to produce two type of matter particles. Because the quark has QCD interactions, and then the quark can radiate one gluon. So the radiated one gluon in the final state will behave like a jet. In that sense, we will have some information, at least from the jet. And then we can learn something even for the dark matter part. So that kind of specific event is so-called monojet events. And so here I just give you one real event from CDF. And so this is the plot which we look at the detector activity perpendicular to the collision axis. And as you can see, and there is one big part. So there is just some different way to measure the how much of the energy deposited in different parts of the detector. And as you can see, that and the blue is electromagnetic energy, and this purple is hydraulic activity. As you can see, there is one bigger part which carries much larger energy than other parts. So that can also show you in this kind of polar angle way. And we have the jet, the one single jet which shows up with a large transverse energy. So it turns out that the CDF has already performed a search for this signature, this monojet signature. They were not actually searching for dark matter particles, but they are searching for large extra dimension. So in this kind of large extra dimension, and the effective Planck scale is the gravity becomes strong at the GeV scale, and the high energy collision can produce gravitons, and which will escape into extra dimension. And since the graviton will escape from our ordinary four-dimensional world, and that means that they will behave like a missing energy, the same thing as the dark matter. So I'm trying to reinterpret their existing searches and trying to learn something new about the dark matter particles. So before doing that, I should also remind you, since I mentioned before that neutrino behave the same way as the dark matter particle, at least from collider physics point of view. In that sense, we also have another process in the standard model to mimic or to generate the same kind of monojet event, and which is that we just produce a single Z boson, and the Z boson decays to two neutrinos. And we can also have this initial state radiation and with one gluon in the final state. So before we can make any claim about the discovery of extra dimension or the discovery of dark matter particles, we should first make sure that what we observed cannot be explained by the standard model first. So here is what CDF observed. And so here is the number of events as a function of the missing energy. And as you can see, the bright dot, the points are the observed data. And this green continuous lines are the standard model predictions. So you can see pretty well that the data agree with the standard model prediction. And so from standard model, we expect 8,600 and plus error around 300 events. And what we actually observe is around 8,400. In essence, you can see that this observed number actually is within the error bar of the standard model predictions. In essence, we cannot argue anything. We cannot argue we discovered the extra dimension or dark matter particles. But instead, we can use that observed data trying to translate that in terms of constraints on how much of dark matter produced at colliders. And use that constraint, then we can learn how strongly interacting of a standard model particle to dark matter particles. So we can just give you some rough formula for this monojet missing energy for this specific effective operator. And we can see that this cross-section will be proportional to alpha strong because the initial state, the initial part radiated gluon, that carries QCD interaction, that carries GS. And then it is proportional to the momentum of the jet over the cutoff to the fourth part. And then the lower result will set just a lower bound on the cutoff. And recall, previously I calculated the direct detection scattering cross section, which has this formula. And then we can use this lower bound from monojet search to set an upper bound on the direct detection cross section. So this is what we get just comparing to the many, many direct detection searches. For example, just give you some example, which is a Picasso, which is very competitive for spin independent scattering cross section. And you can see here is that from one jet search, we have those three lines, the blue, red, and the orange, for different flavors for that effective operator. And this is a dark matter mass, and all the region above this, above those lines should be ruled out. So as you can see that this is the monojet search even imposes stronger constraint than direct detection searches. And to some extent, the monojet search from collider can provide the world's best spin dependent limit up to 100 GeV. And this will be for the spin independent scattering cross section. As you can see that the direct detection search is more sensitive to the interaction than the monojet search if the dark matter mass is above 5 GeV. But for light dark matter particles, the monojet search is more powerful. Since the CDF has accumulated more data, so that means that we can even improve the previous slides by using the current data analysis and get an even stronger constraint on the scattering cross section. And on top of that luminosity increasing, we can also use the shape difference from the dark matter operator. For example, you can see the blue line is different from the standard model, which is the green line. And so in essence, we can use this shape difference and trying to cut the background to improve the sensitivity. And the CDF plus us are using the current more luminosity data and trying to set a concrete bound on the WIMP direct detection cross section. So since colliders are so powerful to test the WIMP scenario and it can even beat the direct detection cross section, then we can ask ask more from colliders. For example, we can ask the following to do this. We can try to measure the mass of dark matter, and we can measure some other particle in the dark sector. We can measure the spin of the dark matter, or we can even measure the coupling of dark matter to visible particles. If we can achieve all of those experiments, then eventually we can calculate the dark matter annihilation cross section and try to confirm or disprove the WIMP coincidence. However, it's not obvious that all of this can be done. And reason is because we don't know the momentum of quarks or the particle inside of the proton, and which we initiate this reaction to generate two dark matter particles. And then the last thing is that we don't observe those two outgoing dark matter particles. We don't know the full information about the momentum of those two outgoing dark matter particles. In that sense, we don't know the center of mass energy from event by event basis. But we can get some more information if the dark matter about the dark matter from some other observed finite state particles. If we have more particles in the finite state, then probably we can get some more information about dark matter. So in that sense, we need to somehow go beyond the effective field theory of dark matter, because for the effective field theory of dark matter, we can only say mono jet almost, and which is just a single jet and carry too much information, and you cannot disentangle the information to learn too much about the dark matter detailed property. So, for example, we can produce some other heavier particles if we go beyond those effective field theory of dark matter. And then those heavier particles, they can decay to the dark matter particles. And at the same time, they would generate some other visible particles or some other standard particles when they decay. And that will provide us more information. For example, that will provide more jets or leptons in the finite state. Unfortunately, we have another collider with a larger center of mass of energy. For example, we have this large hadron collider at CERN, and this is a proton-proton collision collider. And at the current moment, they are running at 70 eV, and eventually they will upgrade to 14 eV. And this is like a factor of, even 70 eV is a factor of 3 larger than the center of mass energy at Tevatron. So, with this large hadron collider, then we can produce heavy particles in the dark matter sector. So just use supersymmetry as an example. For example, we can pair-produce two Guarino, and each Guarino will decay to a dark matter particle, and at the same time decays to two jets, and through exchanging some salt, for example. So then, in the final state, then we will have 4 jets plus Mc energy. Dark matter will behave like Mc energy in the detector. So simply from the energy and the momentum conservation, we can have a very, very two simple observations. So for example, the two jets from the same decay chain should have invert masses bounded by the Guarino mass. So just work out some formula. Depends on the intermediate mass of this guy is larger than this, or whether it is off-shell or on-shell of this guy. And we can have a different formula for the largest value of the invert mass of those two jets. And you can see if we can find out the largest value of those two jets, and then we can get some information about the mass spectrum in the dark matter sector. And so in principle, if we know the momentum of each dark matter particle, but actually we only know the summation of two dark matter particles in the transverse momentum, and then we can determine the Guarino or neutrino masses for that specific case. So statistically, and people figure out that one can use the following variable, just define some variable, and trying to maximize the way how we split the summation of the transverse mass into those two dark matter particles. And by doing that, you can see that in terms of this variable, the number of events will have some endpoint. So just from kinematics, they will have some endpoint. And for example, so here I just choose the Guarino mass to be 1.2 GeV and the SARP to be 1 GeV and the dark matter particle neutrino to be 700 GeV. So for different trial mass, for example, here we choose the trial mass, dark matter trial mass to be 700 GeV, and you get some endpoint here. So we can plot the endpoint of that specific variable and as a function of the trial mass. And here is what we get. And the blue line is what we get. As you can see that, suppose we below this, this point, and the function below this point, if we extrapolate this function, and the network goes to this red dotted point, but if we extrapolate the curve above this point, that will goes to the green dotted point. So that means that when we vary the child dark matter mass from below and from above its true value, this variable, the endpoint of this variable will change slopes. And if we can have enough signal events, then we can identify this point. If we can do that, then we can determine the dark matter mass to be 700 g. And at the same time, also determine the green mass to be 1.2 t, which is very cool. So this sounds very nice. However, from experimental point of view, what we observed is just the 4Js plus miss energy. And so the first question, it turns out that one should first ask, how do we know that dark matter even the topology behave like this way, 2Js here and 2Js here, for example. Why not we can have a 3Js here and a 1Js here and a 4Js on this decay chain and 1Js on top, a 0J on the other chain, for example, like that. But it turns out that we can use another factor we observe, which I just provide to you, that the invariant mass of those visible particles on the same decay chain has some endpoint. Based on that fact, for example, we can define this variable, for example, the invariant mass of those 4Js, and then we can plot the number of events in terms of that variable. And then you can see that there will be a sharp endpoint for this 4 plus 0 event topology. Because for this event, they have all 4Js coming from the same decay chain, and they are constrained by the same mother particle. And there is no sharp endpoint for the other two topologies. And we can also define another more complicated variable, for example. And based on this variable, then you can see that even for 2 plus 2, you will have some endpoints choose here. So after detector simulation, then we can use some function to fit the distribution and obtain the slope, or to obtain how sharp of the endpoints. And we can judge whether there is an endpoint or whether there is no endpoint. And then yes?
You mean this endpoint, I mean there's these competing processes, so you say the endpoint will just show up as like a little kink in the shape, or is that the idea?
Yeah, that's correct. It's just that at the boundary, then it drops much faster than ordinary slow dropping.
Yes, but in the meantime, there might be another one of the processes going on.
Yes.
In addition, so you're only seeing the sum of all the different...
Oh, yes, we also did that analysis, in sense, just to sum of different topologies.
Yeah.
And that just require more events, single events, to be seen entangled as those two cases. Yes. But in principle, it can be done. Mm-hmm. The question is about
how many
events.
How
yes.
many events?
Correct. Yes, so what we found is that around the one of the single events, we can use the existence of endpoints to identify the dark matter event topologies. And after we identify the topology, then we can go through that procedure and try to measure dark matter mass, spin and coupling, and calculate the radical bias and confirm the event coincidence, and to really understand the dark matter. So also, previously I described different approaches to search for dark matter particles from different ways, just depends on the error of the processes. We can have an indirect detection from a cosmic rays here, and a direct detection here, and a collider physics here. And in principle, one should have an interplay of all those three approaches. But fortunately, and in the next 10 years each, we still have the Pamala and the Fermi and the Hess. They are trying to understand the cosmic rays to provide much, much more precise measurement of the energy spectrum of cosmic rays. And then we have as well as this ongoing AMS2, and we have ITIC also study cosmic rays by sending some blue one here. And we have IceCube who can detect neutrinos, and then we have a SNOWLAB, and then we have Xenon 100, they will have a paper out soon within 2 months. And then we have this super CDMS, which will push a much stronger constraint on the scattering cross section. And we have the Pegatron, Also, it will be shut down this year. However, they still have more data to be analyzed, and we don't know what will happen. And then there is this powerful Large Hadron Collider. So I believe that since in the last half century, we established this standard model, and I believe that maybe in the next 20 years, we can also establish this standard dark matter model. Thanks.
What's your worst case scenario?
The worst scenario will be the dark matter only have a gravitational force interacting with the standard model particles. Then we will never know.
Oh, then we're fucked.
Stop. Yes. So that's why I'm saying that Wim Hof's motivation is important.
I see.
Yes.
So the spin dependence could previously explain down, but now it's ruled out by your study. Were there other limits that constrain the light dark matter for spin dependence? Or was the collider really?
I think even for the So I believe that Zeeland 100, the coming data will also
sure.
put a strong constraint on that plot as well, because that's so close to be totally ruled out for that from that curve.
But the collider is in some sense more modeling.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yes.
These multi-particle or multi-particle dark matter models, how natural are they, how cooked up are they?
So, I don't know others' model, but I know the model, the resonant dark matter model. So, which in terms of a supersymmetry, I can use say, Wino or Chargino, which are triplets of SU2. Okay. So, in order to realize that resonant scenario, we found that we needed the mass splitting between Wino, which is a neutral particle, and the Chargino to be 10 MeV. However, naturally, when we do loop calculation, even radiative correction to the Chargino and the Wino mass, we will find that the natural splitting should be 160 MeV. So there is like 10% tuning, if you want to see. It's not that tuned, at least for this resonant dark matter model.
But multi-particle models kind of come out naturally out of supersymmetric models, I suppose.
Because the software term, the majority of the software term of supersymmetry is to some extent is the same. Is the same for different particles. So then you look for the shift of from different different radiative corrections.
To follow Brian's question, did I understand you correctly to say that DAMA is dead or close to being dead, or is there still a loophole where you can accommodate that DAMA with everybody else?
I'm saying that the simple, just a single dark matter assumption.
Inelastic things are still.
Inelastic thing, and with the uncertainty from the dark matter velocity distribution is safe. Because that can even introduce another factor of 10. Uncertainty, if you want to really think.
He'll never die.
So if you do see the kind of thing you're looking for, like a cutoff and an endpoint to this,
yes.
Then how certain can you be that you're seeing dark matter? And I mean, how many competing explanations would there be for that same kind of future?
I think I put it this way. So if we see something like that, and then I would think, especially for the with the events contain large mass energy, and then we will see that there at least some particle which can escape the collider, and we have no clue how long lifetime it could have, because the detector only has a limited size, correct? And we will not know whether it can live forever outside of the detector. Yes.
Any questions? If not, then we should thank you for the revolution.